Leishmania is generally considered sort of an exotic parasite when it comes to what's going on in the U.S. And although we do have some transmission occurring in Texas, we'll talk a little bit about that. There we go. There may be some potential for Leishmania to become a little more established in the States, and this is one of the things I want to talk about today. The title of this is a survey of phlebotomous sandflies at U.S. military installations and any implications that this might have for transmission of Old World Leishmaniasis. As I was mentioning, Leishmaniasis has really been around for quite a while. I remember one time at Walter Reed when they were reviewing whether Leishmania was an appropriate thing that should be studied. It was introduced as one of these old diseases that really may not have too much implications anymore. Since that time, we've learned that this is not the case. But here's depicted in an artifact that is quite old, and then also a very similar lesion in a child with Leishmania major. When we look at Leishmania, there's over 350 million people at risk. And in terms of human suffering and economics, it's second only to malaria as far as protozoans are concerned. It's endemic in 22 New World countries and 66 Old World countries. We've talked a lot already about the clinical forms that people have talked about, so I will move on to that. This is a global distribution of visceral leishmaniasis. At this point, and this is pretty much for humans, the U.S. is not included in that, but with some of the studies that we did starting in 66, there is a lot of visceral leishmaniasis in the U.S., only at this point it's in dogs. There it is. So in the eastern part of the states here, there's actually quite an abundance of leishmaniasis in dogs. This is a distribution of cutaneous leishmaniasis, and you see we do have some of the New World cutaneous leishmaniasis transmission occurring in Texas. Now, I want to move on to leishmaniasis in Iraq. Again, these are the kinds of leishmania that are there. We have both visceral and cutaneous occurring in Iraq. This shows the distribution from sort of a historical standpoint, although I know that a lot of the cutaneous cases that came back with soldiers actually occurred more in this part of Iraq, which hasn't been mapped in the past, so it's quite a bit more widespread through the country than appears here. So the incidence of leishmaniasis in the U.S. soldiers deployed actually turned out to be quite high during the second Gulf War. And these are the numbers. And these are numbers are probably a little bit low because these are actually confirmed parasitologic cases that were taken and treated at the hospital. But as you see, there were more than 1,200 cases that were confirmed. Most of those occurring in the Army. This shows the incidence by year, and we had many, many more cases occurring in the first part of the conflict. I guess I shouldn't call it a conflict, but and then they dropped off quite significantly, and probably the most important factor in this drop-off was the introduction of air conditioning into the soldiers' sleeping quarters. These are the cases from the first ODS, and we had 20 cases of viscerotropic cases, and these were identified from the bone marrow. There was no lesions or anything that appeared on these soldiers, just parasites isolated from the bone marrow. And then we also had some cases involving the true visceral disease. So far there have been 4 cases. But most of the cases have come from Leishmania major or the cutaneous cases. So this brings up the concern with over 1,200 cases and probably closer to 2,000 cases returning to the U.S. is there a risk of this parasite, of this leishmania, being transmitted to other people in the U.S.? In considering this, we want to take a look at the life cycle or the epidemiology of leishmania. We have an enzootic infection where it's maintained in the reservoir and passed from reservoir to reservoir by the sandfly. And then when a human sort of comes in and gets bitten by some of these infected flies, they pick up the parasite. This is the zoonotic case, and this is a case with most cutaneous leishmaniasis. And then sometimes we can have an anthropognotic transmission. Generally, this is considered not to occur with cutaneous leishmaniasis. Okay, it does occur with some of the visceral kinds, but a lot of these studies have been done in areas where there is so much reservoir transmission going on. I'm not sure that we would be able to identify a autogenous case or not if it did occur. So if we want to set up the conditions that are necessary for transmission, we need a source of the parasites. We need a suitable vector for the parasite or the disease. There needs to be contact between the disease source and the vector, and then contact between the vector and the new host. And if we want to carry this farther, besides just localized transmission, which may happen and has happened with malaria at airports and things like this, if we want to think about the possibility of this becoming an emerging disease in a particular area, besides a suitable vector, we need a sympatric distribution between a reservoir, we need a suitable reservoir in the area, and vectors. And the vector only occasionally really needs to come in contact with man for this to happen. Okay, the source of the disease. Okay, we've talked about this already, and this is, in this case, returning soldiers. Most of the soldiers coming back, as I mentioned, were cases of leishmania major. This individual here, this is actually not leishmania, but this is typifies the biting intensity of the sandflies that some of these guys were exposed to, which was really quite intense. Now, these are some of the cases of soldiers, the types of leishmania they brought back. Lesions were on most of the exposed parts of the body, on the hands, the face, the ears, the legs, the arms, and some of these were actually very aggressive, as can be seen here. The next thing we want to talk about is the possibility of contact between the disease source of these soldiers coming back and the vector, or is there a vector in the States? As has been pointed out, phlebotomy is the only proven vector of sandflies, and they pick up the parasites from macrophages. They develop infections in the gut. Then they bite the host and transmit the disease. As far as mammalian feeding species of sandflies in the U.S., we've identified four at this point. Leuchsomyia anthophora, which is mainly a rodent feeder. It will occasionally feed on a man or a higher animal. But most of the times they feed on rodents. Leuchsomyia diabolica is an avid mammalian feeder, will feed on people without too much reluctance. Leuchsomyia cruciata is sort of isolated to a small part of Florida, Georgia area, not very widespread. And then Leuchsomyia shannoni, which turns out to be actually quite widespread, particularly in the East. And with some of the work that's been done here, we've identified it even into Texas. Quick go through of the life cycle. Larvae hatch out from eggs in about a week after they're laid. The larvae go through four instars, takes about 4 weeks or 6 weeks, depending on temperature, for this to develop into pupae. This is actually Leuchsomyia shannoni larvae, and this is one of the pupae, kind of reddish. The fourth instars clear their guts, pupate. We have adults emerging. The life cycle takes about 4 to 8 weeks, depending on the temperature. And this shows the distribution of the sandflies that we have in the United States. Of mammalian feeding sandflies, some of the non-mammalian feeding go farther north, but as far as up into New Jersey and down into Florida and over into Alabama and Mississippi. And then as we've actually found some shannoni in some of our collections in Texas. So it goes over into Texas now. The purple here is cruciata, which is localized to this area. Probably not much of a vector, at least it's not been incriminated in Central and South America. And then we have Anthophora diabolica here in Texas, which is heavily involved in the transmission of cutaneous leishmaniasis in Texas. This is a picture of the female and the male Leucomyia shannoni. Most of the work that's been done on Leucomyia shannoni has come out of Ossipaw Island. This is the work of Brinson and Comer, and they show the distribution mainly from April to December. You get pretty good numbers of shannoni on the island. This graph here from Comer shows the kind of habitat. They generally like live oak, but you also can get them from mixed pine and pine areas. Traditionally, live oak was considered their main habitat, but as we continue to learn more and more about this fly, we find that it actually has quite varied habitat, and you can find it in these other areas. In Alabama, where I collect at Fort Rucker, my best area is not the hardwood habitat, but the pine habitat. So it does adapt to and develop in other habitats. As we look at this map of collections from shannoni from North Carolina, I actually got what the mosquito people call the trash, the bycatch from their traps, and looked for shannoni and sandflies in it. And actually, we found it from the coast all the way up to the mountains in various places, so it's actually quite widespread. So the two bases that we looked at in this study were Fort Campbell and Fort Hood. We also looked at Fort Bragg, but we haven't got the data analyzed for that yet. So these are the shannoni collected from traps from these areas. We use mainly the spermatheca to identify the males or the females. And then the head also is involved a little bit. The males are a little easier to identify by the external genitalia. And this is a graph of the sandflies collected from Fort Campbell. Most of them are shannoni. The distribution is from July through September, October, in that time frame. It's a little cooler there than it would be in Ossipaw Island, so the period of time that they're active is a bit less. And this is for 2007. The other site was Fort Hood, and this is in Texas, where previously shannoni was not thought to exist. The sites that we collected at were around Ballora or Benton Lake, and this is where a lot of soldiers go for recreation and camping and so on. These are some of the sites from Fort Hood that traps were set at. The two fingers represent, this is site two, site four, and so on. And so you see that there's quite actually a diverse type of habitat, from a lot of foliage to not so much foliage, rocky areas, and so on. And these are the data from Fort Hood. And again, most of the sandflies caught were diabolic and Anthophora, and it's not showing here, and then some vexator. But recently we have identified some shannoni from these collections as well. So it also goes into that area. Okay, so I think there is overlap between where soldiers returning to these bases and other places and the sandflies occurs. If we move on to this as the looking at the potential of these sandflies to be a vector, even though there's an overlap between the infection and the disease or the sandfly, it doesn't necessarily mean that the sandfly is capable of transmitting the parasite. But we already know that Leucomyia anthophora and Leucomyia diabolica will transmit cutaneous leishmaniasis, Leishmania major. And so they've already been implicated as being a vector. Experimentally, what's that?
Leishmania mexicana.
Mexicana, yeah. Right. Experimentally, they've been infected with some of the exotic ones that have developed. Enduris did some work with that. And Phil Lawyer had some unpublished results where he also got good develops of Leishmania infantum in diabolica. Leucomyia shannoni, there's been a couple of articles come out recently implicating it as a vector of infantum in South America. Okay, so we want to go look at cutaneous leishmaniasis. Again, we have the transmission occurring in Texas. This is Leucomyia anthophora. This is some of Phil's old data. And this is some of the sites where there's association between the wood rat as a reservoir for this disease and Leucomyia anthophora. And this shows the distribution of the wood rats. And the disease is pretty much limited by this reservoir. So where you find these wood rats, you frequently find the disease. This is an example of the cutaneous Leishmania mexicana. And this is the life cycle of this that occurs. So we haven't been able to get enough Leishmania anthophora diabolica to actually test them and see if they will develop and transmit Leishmania major. This is work that we need to do. However, as far as Leishmania shannoni is concerned, I allowed feral Leishmania shannoni to feed on a lesion of L. mexicana, of L. major, in a mouse, and over 80%, and this is even higher than we usually get with a natural vector, of these flies became infected quite heavily, and they developed what we call advanced infections, which are anterior migrating forms lasting more than 7 days, and then what we look at as metacyclic forms, where the flagellum is actually longer than the body of the parasite, and these are what we consider to be metacyclic or infected forms. So even though we haven't been able yet to carry out the final stage of proving that this is a vector by actually transmitting the parasites, at this point it looks like that shannoni will probably be a good vector for Leishmania major. Now, there's a paper out where they looked at Leishmania major in Leishmania longipalpus, which is a related species of sandfly occurring in Central and South America. And again, the parasite developed extremely well in that fly, although again, they didn't actually do a transmission to a new a host. So in concluding, we do have a source of Leishmania major that has been introduced into the United States in numbers far greater than ever before. I mean, this parasite is brought in low numbers by civilians picking up the disease as they travel, but this is a sort of a major influx. And there's also a high likelihood that one or more of the U.S. species of anthropophilic sandflies will be able to transmit Leishmania major, and also I put Leishmania infantum because this is a parasite that's found in the dogs that are infected in a lot of the eastern U.S. And also there's an overlap between these vectors and infected people. Okay, if we continue along these conclusions, even though there is an overlap in the vector may not have access to these lesions. A lot of times when people have these kind of lesions, they're going to keep them covered by bandages. They're going to be under treatment. We don't know the effects of treatment on transmission. And also, a lot of this activity, the activity of the sandfly, their feeding habitats occurs in the evening after dark, and this may not be a time when a lot of the people are out moving around and about. So the chances of actual contact between the vector and the lesion is probably not very great, even though they do overlap. But if it did occur, then I think there is a chance that they might pick up the parasite and might be able to transmit it. And I think there is an abundant availability of different kinds of reservoirs for these parasites in the U.S. We haven't examined a lot of it. We know that that mice are susceptible. We know that rats are susceptible. Dogs are susceptible. Possums are. So there's just a whole list of different kind of animals that are susceptible. So I think if one of these flies did pick up the infection, we may have a chance of this becoming established, and then Leishmania would no longer be an exotic problem as far as U.S. is concerned, but I don't think it would ever be a major problem, but I think we will occasionally have cases of transmission occurring. That's it. Okay. Acknowledge and disclaimers. The Army takes no responsibility for anything that I say.
We have a couple minutes for questions.
I have a question. I'm in contact with a civilian entomologist working in one of your camps. He says that all the Leishmania cases they see, they have to send home.
Right.
Why are they not treated in the camp?
It's kind of complicated. The only treatment at this point that is authorized is the treatment of pentostam. And in the U.S., it's not an FDA-approved drug. So the only people that can dispense that or treat that are people that have the appropriate permissions to do that, and that's in Walter Reed and one of the hospitals in Texas. So everybody has to come back to the States for the treatment. Okay. It's not saying that a lot of people...
Not all are coming back to the States now, but they're actually doing freeze treatments in the United States, in-country as well as thermal treatments.
Okay. Yeah.
Only the most serious cases are coming back to the United States for defense stand treatments.
Right. The other treatments are not... Now. What's that?
They're also using an antifungal that is actually quite effective as well, and they can do that.
These are not the heat treatment for the minor lesions is probably okay. The major lesions, the heat treatment is not a good option. And the fungal...
Are you talking about the amphotericin B?
Amphotericin, yeah. This is not... This is something they would go use if the other didn't work. It's not a first choice of treatment because of the side effect. Yes?
And have you considered the possible concern for the Caribbean Basin, particularly Puerto Rico? We have a large island, a number of people from Puerto Rico have also gone to the area, and we have a much more open society and a longer breathing period. What's the threat assessment for Puerto Rico?
Okay, there's never been a case of leishmaniasis in Puerto Rico. They've had some cases in horses, and in most cases, it turns out these horses were imported. There's a couple of questionable areas. We're not sure that there's an appropriate vector there, but it's something that probably should be looked at because a lot of these soldiers, there are a lot of soldiers in the Army from Puerto Rico that go back and forth and home. I haven't given it too much thought up to this point, but it may be something that should be looked at too.
One more question.
Yeah. You mentioned that Shmini Major goes well in the Somaliland Republic. And actually, we are now using it for transmission of TBU, and we're getting over 90% transmission of L Major by the Somaliland.
Okay, this is unpublished new results.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
So it proves the point that L Major is very likely to get established in the U.S. with the. But what the Army is doing now to prevent it happening. After the soldiers come, are they allowed to go home before they get treated completely?
Yeah, as I say, I don't think the Army is, they're treating them, and the effect of treatment with the antimony usually reacts pretty quickly. The lesions begin to close up very quickly. And we don't know if these treated lesions are, what the parasite load is in these lesions, and the potential for them to pick up the parasite from these lesions. We're trying to increase awareness of this, that the guys do need to kind of keep these lesions protected and covered when they're, especially at night if they're in areas where they may be getting by sand flies.
Thank you, Ed. So we have to move on. There are certainly many more questions, but we need to move on to the next speaker, who is Eka Yorobiani. She's from Republic of Georgia, Tbilisi. She's at the National Center of Disease Control, and she's going to talk to us about... I got to get out of here first. She's going to talk to us about visceral leishmaniasis in Tbilisi.